Welcome to That's a Dive, everyone. Kyle Martino here. I got producer Mike in the studio with me. And PM, today we're turning the tad pod into a sad pod every
time. Good branding.
Yes. I didn't come up with that myself. I can't take credit. But it's a sad pod today because the three topics are kind of depressing. We're gonna get into clubs that are struggling a bit, managers that are struggling a bit, and even a manager that's gone. Before we get into all of that and let you get your tissues out for the sad pod, let me read the only positive thing we're going to talk about this entire podcast. And it's a review here from Brendan Flaherty. And we're not reading the reviews anymore, but keep the reviews coming. Love them. You're the best. Keep rating it. It bumps us up and people can see the show. But put in your soccer moment, your soccer moment that really sticks with you as a pivotal moment for you as a soccer fan. And Brendan's is, I loved soccer growing up, but the moment I felt truly connected to the game was watching Esmo Gyan take and convert a penalty shortly after he missed one following the Suarez handball in the 2010 World Cup. That was amazing. Suarez, the obvious handball. And then remember he was standing at the edge of the opening to the tunnel and he watched Esmo Gyan miss it and they sprinted and celebrated down the tunnel.
I remember I had a flight to catch and I was like, could I wait and watch the shootout or could I miss my flight? It was so tight. I made my flight.
I mean, airport World Cup match watching
it's
viewing
as it
is
gets.
Great.
Because I remember
so good.
There was an Italian guy sitting at the bar watching the game and then I take my seat. He sits down right next to me. We look at each other, talk about the game. He pulls out a whole bottle of bourbon. We share it on the flight. It was awesome.
Perfect. Friends for life. Then he goes on to say a player got immediate shot at redemption following a devastating miss, following a villainous robbery. The game made me feel and hate. Nothing else can do that on planet Earth. Speaking of feeling and hating, we kind of hate Esmo Gyan because the reason they were in that game is because he scored against the U.S. and knocked us out of the 2010 World Cup. But we're not complaining. We're not complaining. But we're going to complain a lot on this podcast. We got three topics. We're going to talk Chelsea and Antonio Conte, a last gasp, very spectacular, courageous battle back for 3 points that left Antonio Conte diving into the crowd. But is it papering over cracks? We'll talk about that a little bit. Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool. People are saying that the pressure's on, that he needs to get things right, that fans are starting to get critical of him. We're going to have our say about that. And first, another one bites the dust. Ronald Koeman has been sacked by Everton Football Club after a terrible performance against Arsenal and a very bad start to the Premier League campaign. The third firing of the season, the second Dutch manager to go, as De Boer only got 4 games?
Something like that.
Yeah,
crazy. I'll confirm that now while you talk.
Crazy. Yeah. So Ronald Koeman's out. We talked about this, PM, after the show, Robbie Earle and I, and we said it's time for him to go. I mean, he has to be fired right now. And let me first address people that might say that's a bit knee-jerky based on how good they were last year and how promising they looked and how they finished and were knocking on a top four place last year and we're expecting to do that once again. In the summer, they spent close to $200 million on 7 players and they're in the relegation zone. So you could say drastically underachieving, and maybe you could point to a really difficult schedule so far that includes Manchester City away, Chelsea away, Spurs, Manchester United away, Arsenal. Yeah, it's been a difficult start to the season. You know, Jose Mourinho, when he was at Chelsea, I remember he had a similar difficult start, and they gave him time. They gave him till I think it was around Christmas when they decided to sack him after winning the title. But the problem with what's going on at Everton right now is they seem listless. They seem disjointed. They don't seem to have any identity or idea what they're trying to do. A new formation every single game, new personnel every single game. And that'd be one thing, right? It'd be one thing if you're losing games at the beginning of the season and a manager's trying things out because he's got a bunch of new players and he's trying to get the right system. If you saw any signs of progress, if you saw a few good performances in there that let you that made you take pause and say, let's give this guy some time. He did something great last year, and he did. The team looked excellent. And what he did last year was he came in and took out a bunch of the old guard. You know, he took out guys that were aging, that were complacent, that were struggling, and he put in a lot of fresh young faces. And Tom Davies, I think, is the highlight of that young revolution. The problem now is I look at Everton in three categories: old, young, and new. The old players, Leighton Baines, Jagielka, Kevin Morales. I mean, some of these guys that have been there from the Martinez era that have been influential and really good for Everton, just aren't showing any signs of that anymore. And then the young guys. You know, Calvert-Lewin can't get his opportunities at the number nine position. He can't get his opportunities at striker, even though it's clear they don't have anyone who's performing well there, whether it be Sandro, who they've brought in, whether it's Wayne Rooney, who hasn't played that position in years.
And doesn't have the legs to really
And
do
doesn't
that.
Have the – I mean, he would have been great 5-10 years ago as a number nine. And he's good in that role on occasion. But Calvert-Lewin not getting opportunities there. Holgate struggling. Tom Davies not starting. And so the young's not really coming along. And then the new, these new faces of the three I look at that point to a transfer issue. And Steve Walsh is the technical director. He's the director of football that is renowned, known, and respected for what he did at Leicester. He found Mahrez. He found N'Golo Kante. He plucked them from obscurity in the lower French division. And obviously helped build an incredibly successful team that pulled off one of the best sports stories of all time. But now he's at Everton. This is his first job since then. And I see three players in Klaassen, in Sigurdsson, and Wayne Rooney that all want to do the same thing, play the same position for Everton. And none of them are, of all of them, it's the aging guy, Wayne Rooney, who's been the most consistent. You know, Sigurdsson waited the whole window. They spent a ton of money on him. Obviously, he wasn't training, wasn't preparing, wasn't playing games during all of that, and has come in a bit rusty, but also has come in with a huge price tag right at the last minute. He's not hitting the ground running.
If you come in with a price tag like that, you have to contribute right away, and he's not.
Save for a wonder goal, yeah.
In the Europa League.
I mean, that's it. And, you know, I think he's a good player, but I just look at $200 million spent and say, where are they stronger? Pickford? I think Pickford's a good goalkeeper in the long run, but he has a back line that's struggling right now, where Williams doesn't strengthen them. Jagielka is getting close to the end of being able to perform regularly for Everton. And Michael Keane is just showing none of the confidence that he showed when he was bought in the summer. And Koeman even went as far as to say, he's our best player on the ball, but he has no confidence right now in playing with it. So all of the transfers have not panned out so far, and the biggest thing is Lukaku is an enormous loss. It reminds me of when Bale left Spurs, when they were pushing to try to get on to Europa League, or Champions League, and they were pushing for a title race, and they bought 7 or 8 players, and out of all of them, I think Eriksen is kind of the only one who's really panned out. Most of them have been shipped out already.
I think they're all gone.
Yeah. So it's a similar thing, you know, sell that idea of sell Elvis, try to buy the Beatles, and these guys are definitely not the Beatles, and Koeman isn't responsible for that, but he's culpable for sure. You know, he's part of that. Klaassen was one guy he wanted because he knew the Ajax system. He was a great young player that, if you're trying to build out of the back and be fluid and play total football, he has the ability to do that, but he's not even featuring anymore.
Yeah.
So it was time for Koeman to go because of a lot of those things, but mostly why I thought it was time for him to go is his demeanor. And there were reports, PM, about how he was in training. Aloof, his door wasn't open to players.
Yeah.
You know, coming in late, leaving early.
Yeah, when I heard that really surprised me. These reports and rumors that he shows up at 9, leaves at 5.
Yeah. And I mean, listen, they're reports, but getting sacked suggests that maybe it was corroborated by some players. But you saw it in his interviews. I said that after the interview in the Arsenal game. He said, no, actually, you know, we were in this game, and you know, when you go down a man, what are you going to do? And it was kind of like, no, that has nothing to do with this, because here's the big thing. You guys were in the game. You had one of the best 45 minutes of the season in the first half. And then at halftime, you decided to make a personnel and tactical change, and it was a massive mistake. A lot of times managers do that at halftime to try to get back into a game that they're not in. And when they do it, it shows their tactical nous. Here was a game they were in, and his tactical decisions took them out of the game.
Yeah, so they took off Ashley Williams.
And moved into a back four. And one of the many goals they conceded, it was clear, was because they were missing a center back in a space that Mesut Ozil just snuck right through, and Alexis Sanchez put the ball in his head. Maybe he was worried because Williams was on a yellow card, but I said it at halftime. I was more worried about Ghana being on a yellow card. And the tough part about the situation, and I said this at halftime, is that they don't have a replacement for him. Schneiderlin wasn't available. They don't have a like-for-like replacement for Ghana, someone that can cover the ground he was covering, get close to Ramsey, who was bombing forward, get close to Mesut Ozil, get close to Alexis. So I get why you're reluctant to take him out, but if you're going to take someone out because of a yellow card, you take him out. But whatever you do, you don't change the formation that was working in the first half. And they fell apart right at the beginning of the second half. And then the next thing that bothers me, which is why I thought he should lose his job, is his demeanor told me that it just didn't really seem to bother him. He didn't feel like it was a big issue, that he felt responsible for things that were going on. He's been distancing himself from the players from the beginning of the season, you know, saying they, you know, they aren't playing hard, they aren't playing right, they aren't picking up my message, they don't have confidence. And the smile that he gave and his sort of, it reeked of apathy. And it also was a bit condescending. And here's another report that he drives a car to practice that has a Barcelona ID tag. It's a Barcelona license plate. I mean, yeah, we know you played for Barcelona. We know you're a world-class player, but you're not there. And yeah, you've been linked with the job, but you're at Everton, and you need to fix things.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look like you have any ideas to fix it. That's a big problem.
Definitely not going to be linked at Barcelona anymore.
No, that's not happening. And it didn't look like he even cared. I mean, I think that's why Bilic is still in his job, right? Bilic doesn't seem like he's got the ideas to fix things, and he's struggling tactically, and he's making decisions that's hurting the team. But man, it looks like it kills him what's going on right now.
That post sound that we ran in the show was, summary of it was him being like, I've been a manager for a really long time. This stuff doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
Well, fans don't want to hear that.
No. Fans want you to say, today was my fault.
Yeah.
Today was my fault. I'm going to get it right. I made a bad decision at halftime, and I still believe in these guys. We're going to work on it. We're going to get things right. We're in the relegation zone. That's well, obviously, below our goal for the season. So the pressure's on me.
Before we move on, though, who's next? Who should they get?
I said this before the report came out. Thomas Tuchel. I think
the former Dortmund manager.
Yeah,
for people who don't
and
know.
Make Merseyside an ex Dortmund battleground with Klopp being there already, but he did at Dortmund what Everton are trying to do. If you still believe in being progressive and getting the ball on the ground and being fluid and being attacking minded and getting away from the direct style that was one of the reasons you were willing to get rid of Lukaku. I mean, they basically said so much. Mm. They said, listen, you know, he wants to go on to bigger, better things and we're resigned to lose him. And what they wanted to do was bring someone in that could Sandro. That's obviously why they looked at someone like Sandro, because he was going to be more of a linker. He's going to be a guy that would withdraw and play with his back to the goal rather than being pace that stretches in and behind. If you're into that, if that's what you want to do, he's your guy. He's done it at Dortmund with a bunch of young players. He's respected. He's available. And I would do everything to try to get him. I guess it depends on what you want to do, because what's been successful for Everton consistently is the sort of, you know, Moyes 4-4-1-1, you know, be hard to play against, get a sort of blue-collar feel back to the group. And when Moyes took the job, he called it the People's Club, and make the fans feel like you're fighters again. If you want to go that way, you know, Unsworth is going to be the guy right now who was the under-23 coach, who's a former defender for the team, played under Moyes. He wants the gig. And if you want to go that direction, I could kind of see that. But when you spend $200 million, you don't want to go 4-4-1-1, blue-collar, direct, you know, counterattack, be hard to break down. You don't want to do that. And Mascheri doesn't want to do that, the new owner. And they're going to try to go for a big name. Maybe you give it to Unsworth to stabilize things. And Carlo Ancelotti, who's available, is a guy that you could convince after his sabbatical. I mean, that's an option. But they need to go. They need to go bigger right now. Big names, and they're out there. Speaking of a big name, and speaking of Dortmund, and speaking of Merseyside, Jurgen Klopp is struggling at Liverpool now. Tad Potters, some of you are going to be saying right now while you're listening to the pod, well, hey, Kyle, you felt so good about them. You thought they were going to be in the top four or be in a title race. And yeah, I did. And I still do think they're in a top four race and they're good enough to do that. But I underestimated the defensive issue that they have. And I also, when I taped that first pod and the subsequent ones, believed that at the end of the summer window, they were going to address that. I thought Virgil van Dijk would be a hard get because of the way that whole debacle of how they started and tapping him up and Southampton filing a complaint. But I just believe that they didn't put all their eggs in that basket. And it's clear now that the personnel they have at the center back position is not good enough. And people keep saying Jurgen Klopp needs to change the style and you know, he needs to coach them to defend better. Of course, some of that is true, but you can't coach a defender to judge the flight of a ball like the counterattack that he missed that went over his head and Harry Kane got in the back. You can't judge a defender with Matip to not you can't teach him to not raise his hand and look for an offside that he has absolutely no idea if it is because he doesn't see Gomez behind him. I mean, you can bench guys for that. I mean, you can punish them for those behaviors, but these are professional defenders that are making amateur mistakes. And so what he did at Dortmund was built off of Mats Hummels and some guys that would never make amateur mistakes. And that's why he could afford to be risky and press high and want to attack and play heavy metal gegenpress and football. And he can't do it at Liverpool because he doesn't have the defensive personnel to do it. Much like Pep Guardiola couldn't play this pressing Barcelona, Bayern Munich style soccer at Manchester City last year because he didn't have the pieces. What did they do? They spent an insane amount of money to buy those defensive pieces. I promise you, Pep Guardiola wasn't working on their shape without the ball and one-on-one defending. He's admitted he doesn't do that. So what did he do? He bought guys that can defend at the level they're expected to if they want to be title contenders, and Liverpool don't have those defenders. I mean, that's flat out.
So why didn't they go for other players in these windows? I mean, Van Dijk isn't the only defender in the world. It makes no sense to me.
Maybe they did, right? But it doesn't appear that they did, because why wouldn't you say that? Say, you know, listen, we obviously didn't only go in for Van Dijk. And it brings up a bigger issue of, listen, the numbers compared Jurgen Klopp compared to Brendan Rodgers and his tenure at this point with how many games they've played don't look good for Jurgen Klopp. It was better under Brendan Rodgers, and the stick Brendan Rodgers was beat with was defensively they struggled and he couldn't fix it. The other stick he was beat with was transfers weren't working and making them stronger. Brendan Rodgers wasn't really responsible for transfers back then. If you remember, they had a transfer committee of like five guys, and Brendan Rodgers had very little power to make decisions and bring people in. Jurgen Klopp, supposedly, when he took the job, was given all of that power. So a lot of this does fall on Jurgen Klopp, that he hasn't impressed upon the owners, we need better defenders. And in his comments publicly, it confirms that, because he's just protected his players so much this whole time. Only once have I heard him say, we need to spend to bring in more players. But he's never really taken Lovren out and just said, like, listen, this guy's not good enough for us. I mean, the other thing, too, is a couple of the mistakes were Matip doesn't let a ball go over his head, which was clearly not going to get to Harry Kane on a set piece. And we watched the videos, and it's hard to tell, but I've watched Mignolet enough. It doesn't even look like he shouts to him.
And then there was the other goal in this.
Where he went to punch it out, and he doesn't, and he runs into his own defender.
There's a shot of Joe Gomez, like, looking at him.
Yeah, like, give me a shout.
Yeah.
I mean, these are schoolboy errors. And Jurgen Klopp was asked after the game about the defensive issues, and he laughed. And I think some people could look at that the same way I was looking at Koeman and say it was dismissive, it was condescending. But you know what it was to me? It was an incredulous laugh that he couldn't believe he's got to teach professional defenders to do these things.
Yeah.
And so I look at a Liverpool team that still has a lot of promise. I mean, they're doing a lot of this right now without Mane. Their winning percentage drops by 20% without him. I mean, that's a huge, huge loss. They're also doing this without Lallana, who was a very important player for them last season, who's close to being back. They did this game without without Jorginho Wijnaldum. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's another huge miss.
And then Nathaniel Klein, who's a very good right back.
So they were they're weak right now, but that's not why they lost to Arsenal and
to Tottenham.
Or sorry, to Spurs. They lost because Spurs were excellent mm-hmm. on the day, but they lost because individual errors that shouldn't have happened. Big games, that's their wheelhouse. I mean, last year in a table of the top six, Liverpool were top of that table. So, you know, they love the big game. They live for the big game. And Wembley, by the way, is not White Hart Lane. So they felt like they could, and they were getting back into the game. When they made it 2-1, it was like game on. That's when he made a decision I loved, which was he took Lovren out in the first half, which is the most embarrassing thing to ever happen to a player.
Especially when you see the player, it's like, is he hurt? And then we're watching the film. Nope, he takes a seat on the bench.
Great. Do it, because who cares about a player's, at that point, who cares about his pride? He's a liability. And I liked what he did. He brought Oxlade-Chamberlain in. Even though he hasn't been great for them, he's a threat on the left, especially with Trippier bombing forward, so you have someone that can counteract that. He could have brought Trent Alexander-Arnold in to play right back and kept Emery Chan in the middle, but he put Coutinho in the middle, where he's great at getting on the ball and picking Spurs apart. So I loved his moves, his decisions, but his own defenders shot the team in their foot. Listen, at some point, Jurgen Klopp's going to have to really come under a lot of scrutiny. But for me, it's too early. I still believe he's the right guy, and I still believe he's got something good with this group, and they can get in the top four. They're out of a title race now, but I do believe they can get in the top four.
Do you think one highlight from the Liverpool game, or one player who I thought was really good, was Joe Gomez?
Yeah, he's
do you
great.
Think he has a future in that center back role?
Yeah, totally. And right now, say to yourself, he's the future. Lovren, it's clear. I've given him so many chances. Mm. It's not going to happen. And Lovren's taken painkillers. He's really, really struggling. So it's not as if it's a major slight on Lovren. It's like, listen, for whatever reason, you're not the guy right now. We'll help you make a move in January. But we're moving forward with Gomez and Matip. The other thing is, don't forget recently, one way they solved the center back problem was Lucas. I mean, that highlights that they had a center back problem well before this moment. Lucas was the reserve that would come in and stabilize that back line. He was great at it. He played defensive mid.
Valderrama might be able to beat him in a foot race too.
But you don't want to know why he was great at center back? Not because he's big, because he's fast, because he's good in the air, because he just reads the game well, and it's what they're desperate for. When you play a risky pressing style, you leave defenders 1v1. And when defenders are left 1v1, you have to anticipate danger. And these defenders, they defend. I talked about it a few weeks ago on my pod. I said it's the bystander phenomenon. They think someone else is going to take care of the issue, and no one takes it upon themselves to see out the danger before it happens, and they can't be trusted to do that. So you can't play the way Jurgen Klopp wants to play, which is let's press to win the ball back, and when we're broken down, which invariably is going to happen, we're 1v1 in the back, and we got to trust our defenders. You don't have a good enough goalkeeper to do that. You don't have good enough center backs to do that. You don't have a defensive midfielder who's been playing this position his whole life to do that. As much as I like Jordan Henderson, and I think he's taken that role on, with how weak their center backs are, it just puts so much more pressure on him. So I get it. People are upset. Liverpool, they kept Coutinho. They passed up an insane amount of money for him. And all of that was because they believed in something special this season. But I said this at one point. Keep Coutinho at all costs. That's what I believe. I believe he's priceless right now because you can do something special. But it was contingent on spending to get another center back. And they didn't do that. So it kind of makes the keep Coutinho at all costs strategy look silly now, because they could have sold him and still been able to try and get in the top four, and they would have had a huge sum of money to strengthen the team.
It's good to remind the, like you're saying, you know, Liverpool fans, it's probably a tough time. I mean, they're sitting mid-table right now. Mm-hmm. They're behind Watford. They're behind Newcastle. They're behind Burnley.
Oh, jeez.
That's tough looking on the table.
Yeah. I mean, obviously credit to those teams with the season that they've had and how they've started. Interesting that Sean Dyche is being linked with some of these jobs, the Leicester job, the Everton job. But that can't happen. It just can't happen. With what they've spent, with the issues they have, I mean, Silva's an incredible manager, but that that team is slapped together. I mean, there's a bunch of new guys, and it just shows how good he is that he's figured it out so quickly. I mean, think about the defensive issues they had. Watford, right. Under, by the way, a defensive specialist and Walter Mazzarri. So why isn't Klopp getting it right? And that's a big, big question that, for me, I still think he's the right guy, but the longer this thing goes the way it is, that question's going to get louder and louder, and Klopp's going to have a hard time answering it. Last one in the sad pod. How's everyone doing out there? I mean, is this too depressing? I mean, I know that there's typically at least one upbeat topic, and I'm taking you on to the third of the sad pod. And
I'm interested to see your sad angle here, though.
Okay, here it is. Chelsea. Defending a title is incredibly difficult and incredibly rare. Expect a slump. Expect a difficult start to a season. Okay, so I'll say that in defense of Conte. He wanted Lukaku. He didn't get him. He got Morata. Morata's been excellent, so that doesn't really seem like a big problem. The start to the season isn't terrible, and they just came off of a really great sort of showed spirit, showed belief, showed commitment to battle back and get into the game. It felt very much like his first season last year, before that Arsenal game, where they were winning games like this. They were defensively unstable. They were a little bit disorganized. They were struggling to find their identity. But they had belief. They had spirit. They had the courage to win games. And it always ended with Antonio Conte diving into the crowd, right? But the reason it feels different this year is because the red flags started in the summer. I talked about it in my preview pod. I don't feel good about Chelsea this year because the Diego Costa thing, for me, was a massive distraction that didn't have to happen. And I remember I did a little a mini TAD pod solely on that decision, where Antonio Conte decided to, based on petulance and behavior from Diego Costa, by the way, petulance and behavior that started from the second he got to Chelsea, the same petulance and behavior that Jose Mourinho just didn't ignore, but just was able to overlook and keep him scoring goals and being huge for them.
And is anybody who's watched him play for Atletico before he came to Chelsea, he's always been like
that. Yeah. So that's who he is, but he wins games and wins titles. And they don't win the titles they won recently without Diego Costa.
Without a doubt. Right.
So he wants to go to Atletico Madrid. They can't get him until January. You've got him for half a season. You tell him, listen, you're not our number one striker. Morata is. Okay, but we want you here. We're going to let you go to Atletico Madrid. We're going to keep you until then. We're going to keep you fit. We're going to keep you going. You love Chelsea. You love the players. You love the fans. Help us get in a good point halfway through the season. We'll let you go, and we'll wish you good luck. The way it was handled was sending him a text saying he was no longer needed and creating that whole mess was bad management by Antonio Conte. So that started the season. Then there was the weird situation of Antonio Conte, there's news, he signed a new deal. So everyone's thinking, okay, remember there were rumors literally right from the start when he got there that he was going to leave, that he didn't want to be there, he was homesick, his family wasn't there, he couldn't get the Italian coaches that he wanted on his staff, and that all began right from the beginning. So immediately in the summer, it was about signing him up to a new deal. So when the announcement comes forward that he signed a new deal, you look through it, he didn't add any years to it. So you think to yourself, well, hold on, you took more money, but he didn't extend his deal. So then again, that's not crazy. That's not bad management. That's not bad from the ownership and the directors. But it just raises a bit of a question of, well, so he doesn't really want to be here long term.
It's a pit stop. Right?
Yeah,
that's what that means.
Totally.
Him. Yeah.
So it didn't quiet any of those rumors that he wants to leave and he wants to go. And now they're all coming back up again. So that's how the season started, and then they weren't spending a lot. I mean, that's if you look at the Abramovich era, and I think it's 14 trophies and 11 managers.
It's amazing.
It all comes with enormous outlay. They are great at selling, too. They've done really good with getting high values for either young players that they collect or David Luiz and other situations when they've been able to get big money for Oscar and you know, they run the business really well. But this summer, they didn't spend a lot. And Antonio Conte was making no secret of the fact that that annoyed him. And so it just started off with a bad feel this season. And this last game, the narrative, I mean, all of the writers, I'm sure, that were at the game had it all prepared, right? They had their articles, pressure on Antonio Conte, is this last straw, what will Abramovich do? I mean, all of these writers had to quickly delete, and rewrite the narrative. But it just doesn't tell the true story. They got back into a game through individual errors for sure, and profligacy for sure from Watford. Watford should have had that game buried. Richarlison had two sitters. When I say sitters, I mean, PM, we would put those away right now. This guy's great. He's one of their best players this season. He should have buried at least one of them. And the game gets out of, I mean, 3-0 at that point. The game gets out of their reach.
It would have been 3-1.
3-1. 3-1.
Yep.
And then 4-1.
Right.
I mean,
it,
at that point, they still were dominating the game. I mean,
and then Amorata was getting beat up.
Struggling.
He couldn't handle the physicality from that team.
And then they sub out Morata and they put on Batshuayi, who we know that Antonio Conte doesn't trust and doesn't think can do the job. Credit to Batshuayi. He was subbed at the hour mark the game before and obviously was furious. We saw it on his face. Didn't even shake Antonio Conte's hand. I can't remember who came on for him, but maybe it was Pedro, I think, and didn't shake his hand and went off to the bench. But anyway, he's not scoring in the league. He's been doing it a bit for them in other competitions, but not scoring in the league. And he comes on and scores for them. Now, all of a sudden, is he their guy? No, Morata's their guy. So that's not going to really change that situation much. And the thing I saw, kind of going to the observations on Koeman, the thing I saw from Antonio Conte, because we have a tactical camera in the studio that shows us the whole game from a big wide angle, so we can see the movement off camera and you can see the technical area. And one thing you see every single game from Antonio Conte is he's like a caged lion, sprinting back and forth in the technical area, kicking every ball, shouting, screaming, losing his voice. I mean, he's like a ventriloquist. He moves and the team reacts and he gets things out of them. But what did he look like that whole game? It looked like a wax figure of himself. I mean, he wasn't moving, arms crossed, and looked basically like he had accepted defeat. The only other time I saw him like that was at Old Trafford the season before. Remember when Marcos Alonso got hurt in warm-ups and we were over there. We were over there covering the game. And Antonio Conte sat on the sideline. They lost that game. That was the man-marking job
Herrera.
On Eden Hazard.
Yep.
And he just sat there and didn't move the whole game. It was so bizarre. And I saw it once again at Stamford Bridge. And that worries me. It worries me that one reason I thought he took out Morata and put Batshuayi on was to make a statement because he thought they were going to lose the game and say, you know, look, this is what I've got. This is what you've given me. It's not good enough to compete. And that's why he wasn't animated. He wasn't really fighting back with the team to try to get back into the game. He was just putting guys on and sitting back. And I think he was a bit surprised that they got back into that game and then all of a sudden came alive with the emotion of diving into the crowd. So I just think there are issues at Chelsea. I do. And managers don't stay long there. I mean, that's nothing new. And I think it's because mediocrity is not acceptable there. Abramovich doesn't wait to see if managers can turn things around, especially managers that do things that I think are passive sort of subliminal messages to the ownership that you're not helping me. You're not helping me get this right. So I think it's, even though they won that game, a bit of a let's watch and watch the space and see how it goes.
The one thing that I keep on thinking of watching this Chelsea team play, they won this weekend, but it's just so difficult for these clubs in England to repeat as champions.
Mm-hmm.
This year, they're not terrible. They're not nearly as good. The year before that, Leicester were awful after winning it.
Mm-hmm.
The year before that, Chelsea were terrible after winning it. The year before that, City couldn't follow up that title with a good campaign.
Mm-hmm.
The year before
Manchester
United.
Yeah.
Why is it so hard for these teams to repeat? Do the players just lose their eye on the ball? Is that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a bit of a fat cat. That's Robbie Earl's thing. Guys get new deals. Everyone feels good. They're doing their sponsorships. They go off in the summer and they celebrate and they come back a bit complacent. But what's weird is Antonio Conte did it three times in a row at Juventus.
Right.
So obviously you can repeat and you can keep players at a high level. Sir Alex, I mean, he was able to do that. But I think it's just because the Premier League's so competitive. I mean, a Leicester can win it. So you can, I think, afford to be a Real Madrid, a Barcelona, a Bayern Munich, a Juventus. You can afford to kind of let yourself slip a little bit, but have the margin to be able to fix it and get dominant again. You know, look at what some of these teams at the lower end of the table have spent. I mean, it's incredible. Everton spent $200 million. Right. And by the way, that has them in the relegation zone.
They're in 18th place, yeah.
Yeah, so money doesn't really always solve the problem in the Premier League. There was a point where you could look at the Premier League table and it was money spent. It literally would end that way. How much did you spend? What are your wages? And that's where you finish in the table. Yeah. It's not like that anymore. So I think Chelsea, Antonio Conte's got a big problem on his hands. He does. And we'll see how Abramovich deals with it in the days to come. I mean, he can win some games to quiet that down for sure. But we'll see. We want a positive pod.
Yeah,
next week, we want three really great, amazing topics. So that's what we look forward to.
There's a good game Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm. I'm off, so I get to sit there on the couch in my sweatpants and really take this one in.
Yeah, so hopefully that will be, we won't get boring Mourinho.
No. I mean, that's another United. One. I could have talked Mourinho today.
Yeah, very easily.
I know my Tad Potters that are Manchester United fans are a bit sick of me. Especially after my Jose Mourinho's bad for football pod last week. Yeah. But that's it for this week, you guys. We're gonna go away. We're gonna meditate. We're gonna expect good games and great storylines next weekend, and we'll have a great pod for you, right? So until then, stay on your feet.